And I am delighted to say that on the line now is the Sinn Féin health spokesperson, Louise O'Reilly, TD. Louise, first of all, good afternoon. Welcome to the programme. And secondly, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, because I know Monday is a very busy day for you with clinics, etc.
It is indeed, but only you know my form. I'm always happy to when I can.
Thanks.
So good afternoon to you and good afternoon to your listeners.
Thank you so much, Louise. The reason that we got you on today is I came across a very interesting press release from you during the week, where you flat out called on the government to not allow the new children's hospital to become a cash cow for the construction industry. Talk to me about this, Louise.
Well, I know your listeners will be aware of this, because it's hitting the headlines for all of the wrong reasons. Now, and I just want to start, before we get into to the business of the money, I want to say Sinn Féin fully supports the building of the Children's Hospital. Nobody knows more than we do, because we're the ones that have been highlighting it, you know, the waiting lists for kids and the need for additional facilities. We absolutely support it. But the way that it's being constructed at the moment, it does not represent good value for money for hard-pressed taxpayers, because that's who's going to be paying for this at the end of the day. So if we go back to the very, very beginning, originally we were told that this project was going to cost somewhere in the region of €650 million. We now know that it's going to cost at least €1.73 billion. So that's nearly treble the cost. And that's before we put in things like the information technology and other equipment and ancillary stuff that needs to be put in. So we're looking at a project that could potentially, and I would wager, will go to €2 billion. And really, at the end of the day, the big winner out of this is going to be the construction industry, because it seems that they're in the driving seat, while the minister is sitting in the back with his eyes closed and his arms folded, and these bios seem to be in charge. You know, we've had a situation whereby the minister didn't agree a maximum cost price with the builder before this started. So we know that the builder has now submitted, on top of the money already spent and already committed, the builder has now submitted additional costings to the National Paediatric Hospital Development Board, and has said that they're going to have to pay for additional monies to the builder. And to me, it seems like the builder is in charge, the minister is running along behind them, and the taxpayer is the one going to be left footing the bill. And I just don't think that's right.
Louise, I'm going to try, for the benefit of the listeners, because I am a very, very simple-minded person, and I like to take complicated things and make them simple, because at the end of the day, none of this is reinventing the wheel and it's not rocket science. If you or I are getting an extension or a job done on the house, there's two things we do. We describe in detail what it is we want. We see it in drawings, etc., whatever way you want to do it. Nowadays, you can do it even in 3D graphics.
In 3D, that's right.
And we agree a price with a builder or somebody in the construction industry. And that becomes known ever more as the budget. Is that not the simple way that all these things are undertaken? Why wasn't that done from day one here? Because I have great time and have great respect for you, Louise, but I'm smiling here at your optimism, because looking at this, I can see it going well north of €2 billion. I don't think it's going to stop at two.
I hope, and that's the thing, because what we're doing at the moment in Sinn Féin is we're trying to get the minister to take responsibility for this and actually take the wheel and get him, put himself in the driving seat on this one, because at the end of the day, he's the one who's responsible for spending taxpayers' money. But if I could just go back to the process. So when the contractors, when the tender was sent out, but they didn't specify the quantities. So they said, you know, we're going to need bricks, of course, we're going to need copper cable, of course, but they didn't specify the quantities. So there was always going to be that kind of leeway. But you're dead right in what you say, and I said this to a junior minister on another radio programme at the weekend, is like the builder needs to understand that there is not a money pit, that there's not an endless pot of money, And it seems to be that the builder didn't get that message. So I had work done in my house recently, and I said to the builder, there's the money. Now, you have to have something for contingency, don't you? And that won't be lost on your listeners, because stuff happens while you're in the process of building. Stuff happens. So you need to have a certain percentage put aside for contingency. And that always should be done. That's the prudent thing to do. And your listeners will be aware that that's the best way to do things. So you've got your price. You've got an agreement on what it's going to cost. And then you have your few bob for contingency. And that's it. Now, the builder that did the work on my house knew. There's no sense in me going back to Louise and telling her that something else has happened and I need X amount of money. Because the answer for me was simply going to be, well, you'll have to find savings elsewhere because this is the cap and we can't go above the cap. The problem that we have is that the government and the minister didn't say to the developer, this is the cap and we're not going over that price. So that's what, when I say it is a bit of a bonanza for the building industry, that's what I mean. Like, I don't think that anyone who's listening to this programme would go into a building project and simply say to the builder, well, look, at, you know, you just tell me how much it's going to cost. I think it's a case of, you know, you get some quotes, you go for the best value. You don't necessarily go for the cheapest. So you go for the most reputable builder, you go for the builder who you think is going to deliver for you, you go to the one with maybe the best reputation, and that may not be the cheapest person. In this case, we know that they went for the cheapest bid, and it was the cheapest bid by a considerable amount. So if you're getting building work done on your house and you get three quotes, one of them for 10,000, one of them for 11,000, and one of them for 2,000. Now, I would look at that and think, well, hang on a second, the person that says they can do it for 2,000, how are they going to be able to do that? And I don't think that it's right that the government would go for the absolute cheapest, because, you know what they say, buy cheap, pay twice. So we have a situation now whereby the government went for the cheapest bid, but obviously that didn't have everything in it that was going to be needed. So now the costs just keep stacking up and stacking up. And it's really important that people not lose sight of this. It started off at 650 million. And we are now looking at 2 billion. So we're talking about trebling the cost of what is essentially the biggest infrastructure project that the state has undertaken in decades. It's a huge project. It's a really welcome project. It's a really important project. But at this stage, we're looking now at really important projects that need to be built in our own communities. For example, we've been campaigning for a primary care centre in Swords. But I'm looking at the budget that the department has, and it's been eaten up with one project. And I'm thinking to myself, there won't be any money left for the project that we badly need in Swords. We badly need a primary care centre in Swords. But there's not going to be any money left if the Children's Hospital are hoovering up every available shilling.
And what is the minister's answer to this when he's pushed on it, Louise?
Well, now, this is going to make your listeners laugh, and it might raise a smile on your own face, don't it? Apparently, and you'd laugh if it wasn't so serious. Apparently, it's not an overspend; it's an underestimation. So they didn't overspend on the cost of it; they simply underestimated how much it would cost. So they would be chastising us and saying to myself, as the opposition health spokesperson, you shouldn't call it an overspend. It was simply an underestimation of the cost. Now, I mean, as you say, that would be funny. That would be funny if it wasn't so serious. The minister says that it's important that the hospital is built, and he's right. The minister says that sometimes the opposition are talking down the hospital, which we don't do. We want the hospital to be built. We're all pushing for the hospital to be built. We all know it's important. And the minister says that the hospital is needed, which we all agree with. But he doesn't seem to have an answer as to how this went so catastrophically wrong. And he doesn't seem to be, he doesn't seem to be able to take charge of this, which I think is very, very regrettable. So we would like to see the minister actually take charge of this. And, you know, last July, the representative from the Office of Government Procurement, the head of the Office of Government Procurement, resigned off the board. Now, there was some speculation in the media that this person resigned because they were concerned at the level of cost overruns. But the minister still hasn't given a satisfactory explanation as to why that person resigned and who is going to replace him. So at the moment, it seems like the government don't even have a representative on the board who's there to take charge of the spending of taxpayers' money. And, you know, I mean, I take a very simple view about this, Tony. Like, as far as I'm concerned, people work really hard. and people work really, really hard to pay taxes. They give those taxes to the government. It's the government's job to spend that money wisely. And I'm telling you, as a taxpayer myself, but also as someone who represented workers for a good number of years before I was elected, it makes people very angry when they see that there is a kind of a cavalier attitude to this, because it's only public money and it's only taxpayers' money. That's, I think, the money that we should be the most concerned about how it's spent, because I think people are rightly angry about this, because they know that this is that this is money they work hard to earn. It's taxed, and then they trust that the government are going to spend that in their interest, and yet they see that the government have a very cavalier attitude, and as you rightly point out, the kind of attitude that we wouldn't have ourselves as householders seems to be okay at the level of government, and I think people are justifiably very, very, very angry about it.
I wonder if Simon Harris was getting work done in his own house, would he approach it with this mentality?
Well, I tell you, if I was a builder in Wicklow, I'd love to be doing work in his house. Sure, wouldn't we all love to be doing work if there was no ceiling on it, you know?
Louise, it's a phrase I hate using, but for the purposes of shortening up the interview and freeing up some of your time, I will. We are where we are. Now, what do we do from here on out to ensure that it doesn't run to north of 2, God help us, maybe 2.5, maybe 3 billion? How do we rein it in now?
Well, first things first, the minister needs to ensure that somebody is appointed to the board whose sole job it is to manage the money. And secondly, the minister and his officials need to get into negotiations with the builder, and they need to agree a maximum price so that they say to the builder, this is it, we're not spending any more than that. There's the spec, you go and fit it out, but we are not spending any more money, so that the message goes clearly to the builder that there is an upper limit on this and that this is not a free-for-all and that it won't be tolerated. Those would be, in the very, very short term, those would be the two steps that I would take immediately to ensure that this project is delivered, but that it is delivered with a reasonable cost. I mean, we're already looking at the cost trebling from the original estimate, I think, and you're dead right. I don't like that phrase either, but we are where we are. And given where we've got to, I think it's important that the minister himself steps in and that he and his officials engage directly with the builder and ensure that they start trying to get some value for money into this project, even at this late stage.
Louise, something that we hadn't planned to talk about, but I'll throw it out there for you anyway. The number of people on trolleys is gone beyond belief. Particularly, I think, was it Wednesday or Thursday of last week?
649. Or 679, my apologies, on Wednesday last week.
Now, in fairness, I mean, it's very understandable. Winter doesn't come every year, and we have never seen this before, so how could they possibly have planned for it?
If only we had seasons, if only we could predict. We've heard the usual stuff coming out from the government press offices, you know. But I think that more and more there's a tendency to blame the patients. So, you know, when he was asked recently, I understand the minister kind of said, yeah, well, that's because loads of people keep turning up to hospital. And it's like, well, it's not the fault of the patients, Minister. You know, that's not fair. You can't blame the patients, and you certainly can't blame the staff, because God knows, and I've heard this on your programme and others, God knows the staff are up against it. They're doing their absolute best. They're trying so hard to make sure that they're managing within a system that is essentially dysfunctional. Really, what we need to see is more staff, you know, be it at primary care level so people can avoid going to hospital, or indeed in the hospital so that we can open up more beds. I mean, it's not rocket science to say if there's 600 people on trolleys, well, then we know for a fact that there are 600, we need at least 600 beds. We know that there are people currently, and I've talked about this a number of times on the show before, there are people currently in hospital who could go home if they had a little bit of home help. So when we just go back to the basics of the finances again, if I could for a minute, €160 a week is the average cost of home care. €6,000 a week is the average cost of a hospital bed. Now, I mean, you don't need to be a genius to figure out which represents the best value for money. And yet we have an effective freeze on home help hours. We know that the government is spending a lot of money on agency staff and locum staff just to try and keep the show on the road. But they cost more than directly employed staff. but there's a recruitment freeze and they're not employing staff. So this isn't really about how much money is being spent. This is about how the money is being spent. And I think we will keep coming back to the trolley crisis until we start opening beds and giving people another option. Because the one thing that I always say is people will go in. People, when they need healthcare, they will go to the door that is open for them. Now, if there's no door open in their local community, if there's no door open in a primary care centre, if there's no door open in a step-down facility, well, then they have absolutely no choice but to go to accident and emergency, because it is the only door that is open to them in the healthcare system. And we need to start working to put staff in so that we can open up other doors and give people a real alternative, a real option to be treated in their community, to be discharged home with a small amount of home care rather than left waiting in a hospital bed where they don't need intensive hospital treatment and they could be at home. You know, I mean, it's very disheartening, particularly for elderly people, because we know that elderly people do so much better in their own homes for their own health. And yes, they're left in hospital beds very often because they won't put the money into home care. And instead, you've got people that are left at home. They're left in hospital, sorry, and they want to be at home. They do better at home. They'll thrive at home. They have a chance of getting better at home, but they don't have any chance while they're just left stuck in a hospital. And it's very disheartening for the staff, very disheartening for the family and for the patients themselves. And it's all for want of a small amount of investment into the provision of home care services, you know.
Louise, as somebody who sees this firsthand every day, in the Dáil and in football parlance, as somebody who marks Simon Harris every day, is there a direct correlation, Louise, between what we were talking about first in relation to this children's hospital, which is gobbling up money, and the exponential crisis in relation to trolleys? Or would we have this trolley crisis if there was never a children's hospital?
I think that what we have is an attitude. So we have an attitude of, you know, privatisation, and that, you know, that brings with it its own problems. And I think also, and this is something that I say to people all of the time, the greatest con that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael ever pulled on us was to make us to try to make us believe that the health service was unfixable, that it was banjaxed and that it could never be repaired. So people just throw their hands up and they say, oh, sure, look, this is always going to happen. It's always going to be like this.
Yeah, I think the analogy they use, Louise, sorry for cutting across you, is that it would be akin to trying to service a Boeing 747 while it's in the air.
Exactly. And that kind of talk means, you know, oh, we'll never fix it. It's always going to be like this. That's nonsense. Let's look across to our near neighbours in Scotland. Similar demographic makeup, similar geography, similar size, okay? They embarked on a project to basically take back their NHS, right? To take their NHS back off of privatisation, to stop it going down the privatisation road. And they did a couple of things, right? But the first thing they did, the really strong thing they did, was they gave people a statutory right to be seen within a certain time frame. And that meant that everybody was working towards that one goal. They also moved to issue permanent contracts to people who were working for agency and working for locum. They issued them with permanent contracts. They sent a message out to their doctors and nurses. We really want you. We really want you to work in our health service. We need you to work in our health service. We don't want you to go abroad. We want you to stay. We want you to work with us in our health service. And they managed to turn their health service around to the extent that as recently as a year and a half ago, the Scottish NHS actually bought back a large private hospital. So they had begun to see private hospitals springing up around Scotland. And the demand for private medicine went down because they put the investment into the NHS, they put the investment into frontline services, they put the investment into frontline staff. They gave people the legal right to be seen within a certain time frame. Demand for private hospitals went down. That hospital was on the verge of closing, and the NHS went in, bought it lock, stock and barrel, for including all of the staff, and they turned it into an elective hospital where they do hips, knees and cataracts and other kind of routine operations. But the demand fell. We see in this state advertisements on the radio for private hospitals. They're actively looking for business. We know that people who are absolutely terrified are putting themselves nearly into debt just to keep private health insurance because they're afraid of the public health service. It's very fixable. Couldn't be fixed overnight. Everybody knows that. But we need to start moving it in the right direction. We need to stop, outsourcing to the private sector and start looking to the public service. We need to say to our new graduates and to our doctors and nurses abroad, we will pay you properly. We will resource the hospitals and we really want you to come and work in our public health system. It's fixable. It's very doable. We just need the political will to do it, don't you, I think?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not going to rehash one of your recent interviews, Louise, but you were on here with my colleague, Adrienne Murphy, and I mean, for the guts of a half an hour, I think maybe a little bit more, you discussed how, for a population of 4.5 heading for 5 million, we're spending, 17 billion on health?
Yeah, it's actually gone, it'll go up for the budget 2020, it'll be over 18 billion.
Like, that is crazy. I don't care who
you are. We don't get the value for money out of it. And when we look at projects like the Children's Hospital, you just go, that's indicative of how money is spent, and that's indicative of what of where the health service is going and where the priorities are. And I think, you know, if you look at the agency bill and this, I know we're talking about the figure of 2 billion. 2 billion euros will be, at the end of this year, will be the total spent by this government and the previous government. So in the last 8 years, 2 billion euros is what was spent on agency and locum staff. Now, I mean, tell me that wouldn't be better spent employing directly employed staff who'd be there every day, who have a vested interest, who'd be back every week on week, you know, month on month, year on year. That represents good value for money. But 2 billion euro on agency and locum, there'll always be a need for a little bit of agency and a little bit of locum for emergencies, but they're now being used to staff frontline positions. That's just not right. That's just not right. And you know, I'll argue the toss with anyone on that. The minister himself has agreed with me that it doesn't represent good value for money, but he's not doing anything to tackle it.
I may as well be agreeing with you. So that it's bad value for money, Louise. I mean, he's the man that controls it. He's the man in charge. Where does the buck stop?
The buck stops with the minister. And, you know, I mean, I know that there's some of the people who are listening who are living in my own constituency in Dublin Fingal. There will be, there'll be a by-election there on the 29th of November. The former health minister is standing for Fine Gael. And we know Fianna Fáil, they support the current government, they support the policies, they have no health policies of their own other than just to support the Fine Gael policies. So I would say, if there's anyone listening from Fingal, when Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, or indeed the Labour Party, who let's not forget were in government very recently, when they knock on your door, ask them. Ask them how the hell this has happened and ask them if they believe that there is an alternative, because if they don't believe that there's an alternative to what's being done at the moment, and I don't believe that that Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or indeed the Labour Party believe that this can be done differently, ask them if they believe it can be done differently. And if they say that it can't, then I would point them in the direction of the Sinn Féin website, where we publish all of our policies, all of our legislation and all of our alternatives, all of which are costed by the Department of Finance and all of which ensure that, that we will deliver proper, decent public health services available when you need them, not just when you can afford to pay. And I think that's, you know, we need to see the government start from that standpoint and then work their way back to frontline delivery.
Sinn Féin spokesperson on health, Louise O'Reilly. As always, Louise, it has been fascinating. I love chatting to you because it's informative and it's insightful. And again, I can't thank you enough for the time, because I do appreciate that you're very, very busy, it being a Monday. But I am so grateful for your time this afternoon. Louise, thanks a million.
Thanks, Tony. Good to talk to you.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.